using retirement for the continuation of the mentor role with minority nurse leaders. And before I start, I want to acknowledge three people in particular. I want to acknowledge my two mentees who are minority individuals. One is Rosalind Arnold. She's not here, but she works in the community, practicing in the community at a community health center. She's African American. My other mentee is Khalila Hassan. She's a Muslim nurse. She's also African American, and she's a teacher. She's an instructor, very early level instructor of nursing education, community health nursing education. And I want to thank those two because, as someone said so pointedly, it's reciprocal. I get a lot from them, and they give me a lot. And I also want to thank another person who helped me with the computer end of this. She has computer expertise, and her name is Christina Sharbai. So I want to acknowledge those three people before I start. Oh, Christina happens to be Puerto Rican of African American origin also. Now, I want to say I spent 40 years in nursing, and I retired, but life continues. I mentored my whole 40 years. There's something about me. I mentored informally and formally. I think because I have this passion and commitment to nurture, support, and to show empathy to those people who need it. Those are the marginalized people. Those are the people who seem visibly overwhelmed. And those are certainly the people who are young in their careers. But we also mentor people who are shifting. You might be at your middle career, or you might be later on in life, but you're shifting to a new role, and you need someone to take your hand and lead you on. So it's not just for the young and inexperienced, but it's also people who are making changes. So saying that, oh, and another thing that I hated as a professional, nurse, as a practicing nurse, and as an educator, I hated the idea that often we nurses are referred to as being unsupportive, and there's an expression that says, we eat our young. And that used to make me see red, because I'm going to be living proof that we don't all eat our young. So let's move on after that. My first slide is because if you don't understand the difference between mentoring, precepting, and coaching, we all do this. How many of us have been preceptors? Okay. And how many of us have coached people? But mentoring, let's look at the first two terms first. Precepting often involves an experienced person providing information, instruction, feedback in a formalized manner to a novice. Whereas coaching is associated with training for a particular predetermined purpose. Now, mentoring is more complex, and it's more multi-dimensional, and it's also more long-term. It's a long-term relationship where the mentor guides, advises, opens doors, teaches, and supports the mentee. Okay, now, goals and purposes are very important, because if we don't know where we're going, we certainly can't end where we want to be, right? So, and once again, it's a mutual agreed upon thing. Every person knows in their heart of their heart what their needs are. We have to respect them and mutually work with them to help them meet those goals. Regardless of what the goals might be, in my 40 years plus four more years, I found that everyone I've mentored have had at least one or two or maybe all of these things they needed. They needed role orientation. That meant they have a new role, but they need to know what is this role all about. They need a time to socialize that role, to make that transition, and they need skill development. And I was always amazed. My mentees had skills, some skills I didn't have, but I had some skills that they needed. And the leadership role is very important. To grow and develop into that leadership role is something we all need. And that pertains to many things, decision making, all kinds of things that have nuances, that have little things that just takes time for you to learn. Now, one thing I will say, you have to be like a good mother. You have to be able to launch. Because sometime, at one point, your mentee is going to need you less and less and less. And finally, you have to just give way, you know, give over, you know. And that's what we all want to see them out there standing on their own, moving toward that independence. Okay. Now, being a nurse educator for most of my life, whatever I do is grounded in theory. Whatever I do. And Parsi is an ideal, her theory of human becoming is an ideal theory. So I've made it my paradigm to function in this role as a mentor. Really, it's really a teaching-learning role. Really, that's the basis of it. So I'm not going to get heavy on this. I love theory, but I'm just going to show you. Her theory is a very, very simple theory when you think about it. It came out of her life experience, and that's why it's so great. She also added to that what Martha Rogers had to say, her systems, her human systems theory. And last but not least, she came from a philosophical thought called existentialism, which I love. So this is really like my second skin to me. So I find it very helpful. Now, the first thing is, this is all mutually agreed upon. It all is mutually agreed upon. It's something that you have to work with that person in order to be able to help them to get to where they want to be. So the first part is, you get together and you decide, as someone here said earlier, exactly what do we need to do to make this happen. So it's co-created. It's something you two work out between yourself. It's a co-created process, a co-created journey. The second thing, you're focusing on humans. You're focusing on the learner and the teacher. It's not about me. It's really about the learner. So you have to remove yourself from there. You have to be present, but you remove yourself from that point, and look at, what does this learner need? Sometimes it can be individual, sometimes it can be community. So this theory can be used in looking at the community too. Now, looking at the process and looking at the individual, it's a unitary movement. What do I mean by that? It's a humanistic movement. The parts that come together to make us what we are, or to make the process what it should be, cannot be separated. They're indivisible. You can't take one without another. For instance, if I'm a nurse trying to improve myself and I take on a promotion, I bring baggage to that situation. I have my family life, I have my spiritual life, I have my cultural life, I have all these things bearing down upon me. So when I'm looking at that person and what that person needs, I have to take into account those things. You know, I just can't say, forget about that, because some of those weigh down the person, keep them from moving forward. It's also like life, unpredictable. I might plan to do something this moment, but something can come up. It's like our session today. We definitely wanted Mary Lou here, but something came up in Mary Lou's life, right? It's unpredictable. And what I love about it particularly, it's not static. It's like life. It's dynamic. Ever changing, ever moving, okay? Now, what about this movement is so wonderful? This process is a process in truth. Everything about this is honest. We value trust. We value respect for each other. We value commitment. If I say I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there. We value accessibility, flexibility, and most important, you have the freedom. I'm just going to advise you. You don't have to consent. You do what's best for you. You have freedom of choice and you have responsibility. And you cannot be adult individuals without being responsible, can we? You have to be responsible in the end. Okay. Of course, all this comes from this wonderful lady, and I've cited the article. You can read this if you like in your leisure, if you have leisure. Okay, let's move on to the next part. Now, this whole thing, coming from being a retired person, is innovative in a sense, but it's not innovative in other fields, because teachers who teach in public schools, who teach in colleges, have always probably functioned as mentors beyond their work days. But I think we as nurses are learning that we can mentor. We can still share what we know and what we are beyond our work days. So this is kind of innovative, but there are some definitely some appropriate behaviors that we must exhibit and practice if we're going to be good mentors. Relating is the number one thing. Communicating is the number one thing. You must keep remembering, as I said before, it's built on mutual respect, trust, and professionalism. We have to be professional. And you know, when you, it's always said when I was teaching, I can say a thing 100 times right, but do it wrong one time, what is that student going to remember? So at all times, you have to remember you're on stage, your mentee is looking at you, so you must do the things and say the things that you mean for her to learn.
Or him.
Or him, excuse me, for that person to learn. Assessing is very important. We nurses know about assessing. We have our nursing process, don't we? And the number first thing in our process is assessing, so we know about assessing. So that's information gathering. We have to find out, what about that mentee do we need to know to make that next step? What does that mentee need? So we make that assessment. What are those needs, professional needs? What kinds of competencies does this person have? What is she good at? Can she handle situations? One of my mentees has a lot of problems in the same areas I had, managing people. I did not like to manage people. I was too much of a mother to be a good manager. So how does a person handle those managing situations? If that's the area she needs help, then let's work on that, because she needs that help. The next thing is role modeling. Now this is extremely important. I've mentioned this already. We have to set the example that we want that person to later on develop. So it is very important how we model ourselves. Very important. And last but not least, guiding. Guiding is extremely important. And this was kind of hard for me sometimes. That means we have to wean our mentee away from the dependency they have on us, because they have to learn how to make their own decisions. They have to learn how to make their own judgments. They have to learn how to think for themselves. But how do we do this? We gently encourage them to make those decisions. They know they're in a safe place. They know that nothing they say will be criticized in a way that they can't handle it. And as far as skill development, I had one mentee one time. I came on the floor at 11 to 7, and the young lady was hysterical, and I said, "What's going on? What's wrong?" And she said, she expressed her deep felt humiliation, because she had gone to a nursing school that they didn't emphasize skill development. They emphasized test taking. And so she didn't know a lot of things that the nurse aides knew. And she had been humiliated by someone that she supervised because she couldn't do what they thought she should do. So how do you help somebody? How do you help somebody over that kind of situation? That's very important. Now, we talked about the reciprocal relationship. I got benefits. My mentees got benefits. What are some of my benefits? These are obvious. Opportunity to share one's wisdom and experience. Gain a sense of personal gratification or satisfaction. Be recognized for your contribution to your colleagues and to the practice. As I said earlier, I couldn't stand that rumor floating out there that we were unsupportive and we ate our young, so I had to do something to rewrite that story. What about the mentee? What does the mentee get? The mentee gets a lot of things. This is what my mentees told me. They had a chance to adjust to a new work setting. They had excellent examples of role modeling. They had emotional support and feedback. They were able to dialogue about work-related problems. They were able to have someone there accessible, available to them on a regular basis. And the last thing that they talked about, networking, being able to have someone open doors for them was very important. The last objective that I presented to APHA dealt with recommendations and implications for practice, nursing education, and nursing research. Now, since this is human becoming theory, we have to talk about lived experiences. We have to talk to our mentees and listen to them to see what they think they need, listen to what they're feeling. Sometimes it's not even legitimate, but it's real to them. So we have to work through those issues. So if you're in a workplace and you see someone who seems very much overwhelmed, take a moment. Even if you're not an official mentor, take a few moments and listen and talk with that person. You'd be surprised how much that would help that person get through that moment or that crisis. Actively participate in any mentoring relationship that presents itself to you. If you're on your job, it comes up that someone wants to start one, or one is going on, volunteer. Your experience, you have a lot to offer, you will gain a lot from it. Contribute to the development of a mentoring program. Just like Beverly Flynn contributes her time and her energy, sometimes you can contribute resources, because often resources are available, are necessary. And, of course, we as educators, we can guide our students to do research problems or research projects that relate to mentoring. It could be related to mentoring after retirement. It could be related to mentoring at any stage in one's work career, at any stage in the career of a mentee. It could be looking at outcomes that we want to see. I chose professional stamina and resilience. You can look at longevity. Does a person stay in nursing longer if the person is mentored versus a person who doesn't receive appropriate mentoring? You can also look at job satisfaction. You can look at so many things. It could be simple as doing a review of the literature. Look at what the literature has to say about minority nurses and the support and the nurturing they get. What do they say about it? You can take a tape recorder and go and interview some minority nurses and listen to their lived experiences. Write an article. There are many things we can do. As someone said earlier, I look around the room and I see mentors I've had in my lifetime. First, when I was an educator, when I was a community health nurse, when I was a school nurse, and when I went back full circle, I started the community health in my first years in 1963 in Chicago, Illinois, and I ended my career in 2003 in community health in New Orleans, Louisiana. And all throughout that span, I had many, many mentors, professionally, on my job, as well as in my professional organization. For all the mentors in this room, and all the mentors you know, what should we do? Give ourselves a round of applause. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
One of the joys.
I should have said. We need to also support nurses when they need to come to programs like this. Charmaine shared experience she had. At one time, she was supposed to come to one of these programs. She was all set up, and her boss didn't understand that she needed to be here. So if we're in situations where people come to us, and you know they need to be somewhere, we should try to encourage them to go reschedule their time so they can go. And as far as contributing, as I said earlier, you can pass the hat the hat around and get some money to help them take their trip if it's something they couldn't afford to do. So we should. That was one thing I want to make sure that I talked about.
And I'll mention what happened with my student, because I am a mentor to a student. Her name is Christine McCarthy, and one of the assignments that we talked about was that she should, as part of the mentor-mentee relationship, to develop a bibliography and mentoring for us. She was so very excited. She said, "The way I work is I like to do my own thing. I don't want you bothering me, asking me how you're doing." She said, "I have accepted the assignment, and I will do it, and then I'll get in touch with you." Well, that's fine. It's one less activity for me to call her to see how you're doing. She didn't want that. So when a couple of weeks ago I called her and I said, "Where are you going?" I assumed that everything was fine. "Where are you going to stay?" She says, "Charmaine, I can't come." I said, "What do you mean you can't come?" She said, "My boss won't let me." She had just taken a new job. And I said, "Christine, why didn't you call me? Why didn't you let me know what was going on?" She said, "I was so embarrassed." I said, "The same thing happened to me many years ago. And how I got around that, I decided that I wasn't going to stay on that job. Because if somebody didn't understand the importance of what I needed, I don't need that job. I don't need that person." So I left that job and I got another job. But before I accepted the job, after we talked about everything, the salary and the hours and the assignments, I said to this new boss, I said, "I like what you're offering, but unless you can give me an assurance that I will be able to go to the American Public Health Associated meeting every year, I cannot accept the job." And she looked at me and she said, "Oh, I plan to have you stay here, and I want to go to the session because I'm so busy I can't come." I said, "Well, then I'm sorry, I cannot accept the job." I did not have another job to go to, but I remembered what happened with my old boss. And she looked at me. I said, "Well, why can't we both go? There isn't anything that's so important that you have to stay here." I said, "Let us work out." Now remember, she hasn't hired me yet. I said, "We can work out a solution. We can get coverage from another department. This is an important meeting, and we both should go. So if you hire me, it's with the understanding that when the APHA week comes, I'm out of here." And she reflected. She took her 10 minutes. And then she said, "You know what? You're hired. And I will give you time to go." And she kept her word. So with that, had she told me what was happening, I would have gotten her permission first, and then I would have called her boss, and I would have said, "We got to negotiate here." And so I spoke to Anne and Aisha and a few other people. When this program was developed, we didn't think about bosses not allowing people to go. Here are wonderful students who got a fellowship. How would you feel that your boss did not accept this kind of thing? So one of the things I've suggested working on is maybe when a student gets a letter saying you have been accepted, that we should find out where the person works, and somebody, the mentor, should call the boss and say, "One of your workers has gotten a wonderful scholarship to attend this fantastic meeting, and we would like you to help her or him be involved. And we would like to help you help her or him on the job, so that we will broaden our definition of mentorship." So that's the next phase. All right, the next speaker opportunity to make the headings of the sessions. And you need to be, you need to have the sessions attractive because you want to help you make a decision. Would you go to this session or this session? And if you have catchy phrases or catchy titles, you're more likely to do. And one of the texts that I use in public health to have help the undergraduate students get involved in politics was a text by Diana Mason and two other associates, Judith Levitt and Mary Chaffee, is she talks about going from a nurse citizen to a nurse politician. And I thought that was interesting. And I called Mary Lou and I said, are you interested in joining us? Because she has had some remarkable experiences in this role. And I pursued her, how long? 2 months? 3 months? Before I finally caught up with her. And now you will hear how Mary Lou has gone from a nurse citizen to a nurse politician.
Well, and almost, but there's various definitions of politicians. So I'm Mary Lou Henrich, and I'm very pleased to have been asked to come and talk to you today about my experience actually running for the Oregon State Legislature. And I will let you know I didn't win on one hand, but I won a lot. So I'm going to try to tell you about that experience. And I have kind of three simple objectives for my presentation, and I did not do a PowerPoint because I just couldn't quite get to it, to be very honest. But I will hopefully entertain you enough and talk with you at a level where we can just exchange and make this more real than such a formal presentation. But I apologize for not having a PowerPoint for you. But my objectives are, one, to plant the seed that you or another public health nurse colleague of yours might seriously consider running for public office, taking leadership beyond the organization that you work in and going beyond that to really become a leader in another realm that I believe public health nurses especially are equipped, well equipped, to be politicians and do good from the other side of the table. I also want to give you a glimpse into how it really works and lessons from my experience, because I had no clue when I jumped into this. And people who know me know that I tend to kind of ready, fire, aim sometimes. And I try not to, but I do jump sometimes into like, oh, that sounds like a great experience. And then I'm kind of paddling quickly as I've jumped in the water. So I'll give you a little bit of a glimpse. And I'll also offer my support in any way possible for any other public health nurses that you know around the country that are thinking about doing this and have, you know, questions, want to talk with somebody about the real life experience. My stuff is in the back of the book on how to reach me, but I'll also give you my email before we leave. And I want people to think about that running for public office doesn't have to be, you know, the state legislature or the governor or some big office, but there's lots of times small offices in towns, school boards, water districts, I mean, you name it, there's a lot of elected officials who have very important policy roles that I believe do affect the health of the citizens, and really that's what public health nursing is about, is improving the health of the population. And what better way than by helping, being on the other side, knowing information, sharing it, and having the power to make some policy. So I've been a public health nurse for longer than I'm really wanting to count, but I am so glad that Aisha is here because I'm a little less than her, but close. And I've retired a couple of times, but haven't really fully done it. So I started working in 1969 as a public health nurse at Multnomah County Health Department in Portland, Oregon. And I stalked the director because I got so scared in my bachelor's program that I wasn't going to do well in a hospital setting, and I needed to get into the community very badly. And so I stalked dear Miss Palmquist, who finally hired me and gave me the career of a lifetime. the history of Lillian Wald and Henry Street was something, and also Florence Nightingale, who I do believe really does not get the credit for being the mother of public health. She really was that first public health nurse, doing the first pie chart, doing the data analysis, doing all the things she did. So thank you, Florence, and thank you, Lillian, for and many others, for really going beyond kind of a narrow vision of what nursing is and really looking at the health of communities and how can we affect change and improvement in that health. Social justice, inequities, the importance of environments where we live, work, and play, these are the issues that indeed many levels of government, political people, are making decisions about every single day. And I think nurses are not encouraged to think about themselves getting into that arena. It's like someone else does it. We spend a lot of time learning leadership skills, learning skills to influence others, to influence policymakers. And that's what I did a lot of my career, was from the county commission, the city council, the school board, the state legislature, the governor's office. I was many times put into the situation of trying to persuade, give information, and that's not putting that down at all. I'm just saying nobody ever kind of planted the seed with me.